This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Nerds! Today's episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. Smart Travel doesn't just cover points and miles. They break down all the financial aspects of your trip, whether that's the best days to book, how to avoid hidden fees, or which fancy travel credit cards pay off, and which ones are just an expensive flex. If you want your travel budget to work harder, then dive into the best deals, products, services, and more with Smart Travel from NerdWallet, wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient. Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Of delivery for the American people, President Trump makes his triumphant return, of course, tonight. As was mentioned, it's 5 years after his last State of the Union address. This is a joint address to Congress, not a State of the Union, because a State of the Union is typically delivered on or around the sort of the one-year anniversary, first year in office. But this president is working so quickly, I invited him to come early in the process to give this joint address because there's so much to report to the people, and we're delighted he's going to be there.
Yeah, just like Speaker Johnson said there, it isn't the State of the Union. It's a joint address because he is in a position to be giving it the first time for the second term, which is non-sequential, complicated. It's going to look like a State of the Union. And honestly, 6 weeks into this presidency, there is a lot to talk about regarding how President Trump has affected the State of the Union. Let's get to our guest. Joe Concha is with us right now, of course, a Fox News contributor. His book, The Greatest Comeback Ever Inside Trump's Big, Beautiful Campaign, is coming up. We're in March, which means it's 1 month away. Joe, welcome back to the show. It's good to have you here.
Always a pleasure to be here. How are you on this fine State of the Union Tuesday? By the way, can we call it State of the Union? Enough of this joint session to Congress.
It's just for nerds. People
it's
were like,
nerds.
Actually, yes, exactly. I agree with that.
You know, he hasn't been in office for the last year, so it has to be called, shut up. It's a State of the Union. Sorry.
I completely agree with you on that. Give me your thoughts on, the idea of renewing the American dream is what he's supposed to talk about tonight. In the meantime, we've got Justin Trudeau, Governor Trudeau, if you ask President Trump, calling President Trump Donald. Zelensky is saying, maybe I'm going to come back to the table because he says it was regrettable. There's a lot going on in one individual day here.
Yeah, the governor of Trumpsylvania, the 51st state of Canada, he's really been vocal on his way out the door, hasn't he? Real tough guy now. This goes back to what we heard during the inauguration as far as the golden age of America and just optimism, which we don't hear from Democrats in any way, shape, or form. All I'm reading today now is that they're going to have maybe noisemakers, or they're all going to wear Ukrainian-colored ties in solidarity with Vladimir Zelensky. What are you in solidarity with this guy about exactly? I mean, it looks like he's about to go dress to go raise the roof at a club in Istanbul, all right, when he shows up to the Oval Office, for starters. And then he had this deal, this great deal. Raw minerals, we have corporate boots on the ground, that is the security guarantee. America's not going to let anything happen to all of our interests there as far as Russia and the Europeans would provide military equipment on top of that. This ends this war that no one wants anymore, and Zelensky's got to go in there and pick a fight. And now it sounds like he's going to come back to the negotiating table, or not negotiating, just sign the damn thing already,
right,
and we'll be good to go. So overall, you look at these first 6 weeks of the Trump presidency, Annie, and it's success after success. When you take away all the noise as far as finding all this waste, fraud, and corruption through Doge, but more importantly, the U.S. southern border, I always heard from Kamala Harris and Joe Biden that Congress needed to act, and we needed this big bill in order to pass. All I know is we had 10,000 crossings a day under Biden at one point, and now we're almost down to virtually zero, just by the president saying, don't come, and sending a couple thousand troops down there. And that's what did the trick. So that's going to be a big story tonight, obviously.
You know, I think watching, we played the whole exchange here on our show because it was just so wild to watch the exchange between Zelensky and Trump in the Oval Office. Zelensky continuing to talk over. Nobody wanted to let anybody speak, but you're in the Oval Office. You're in the President of the United States office there. It was so bizarre to watch all of that. And, you know, days removed now from that event, knowing that they had the deal ready to sign and the sandwiches to go with it for lunch, waiting in the room next to the Oval Office. I'm watching the Democrats, you know, really react negatively to this because they're pro Zelensky, which is ironically not necessarily pro American.
Yeah.
What do they want Trump to, what do they want this president to do for Ukraine that America hasn't already done beyond really our means to be able to adhere to it?
$350 billion spent so far, $100 billion of it we can't even account for. So Democrats are pro waste, fraud, and corruption, apparently, and no accountability. No, it's not that they want Trump to do anything for Ukraine. They want him to fail. So if Trump achieves a peace deal, that's very bad for the Democratic Party. Not for the world, not for the Ukrainian people, not for the Russians, and not for the Europeans, and not for the American people. It's bad for Democrats. So reflexively, they take this stand like they're standing up against this stupid line. They keep saying over and over again, they're standing up for democracy in Ukraine. That is not a democracy. You're literally seeing men pulled out of restaurants, pulled out of their homes, and being forced to the front lines. And meanwhile, we haven't heard elections being held about there in 3 years because Zelensky knows that if there is an election, good chance he loses. So overall, yeah, you've got to have good faith brokering here. And Zelensky had a 2-inch putt here. Just sign that agreement. Then we could talk about security guarantees through having American investments in your country. And you end this war and you save perhaps, you know, hundreds of thousands of lives over the 100,000 lives that have already been lost. I'm not saying that Zelensky is the bad guy here. Putin was the bad guy. But the reality is they're not leaving the Donbass region, eastern Ukraine. Unfortunately, that has to go to Russia because they're not going to leave and there's no military way to get them out of there. So give them that. Ukraine gets a great investment deal with us and they don't get to join NATO because that's what provoked this whole thing in the first place. And that's the end of it because no one wants this war anymore. Zelensky still thinks it's 2022, and the American media are completely on his side. Some are, yes, but this ain't 2022 anymore because people know what a stalemate looks like and smells like, and that's exactly what this is, and we don't want to have any more American money going there anymore.
You know, we've seen the entire time that Donald Trump has been on the political scene, the Democrats salivating over trying to tie Donald Trump to Putin and to Russian interests. Nobody loves and needs the Russian situation and scenario more than the Democratic Party right now, the people who only care about politics, never care about policy. The tying Donald Trump to Putin is the only thing that matters to this crazy wing of the Democratic Party. And they're willing to put war in priority over Americans' best interest here in order to continue the ruse so that Donald Trump looks bad. How does Donald Trump respond to that tonight at this joint address to Congress / State of the Union and going on here?
He should say, you know what? We should have a special counsel and we should have a former FBI director like Robert Mueller. We should give him millions of dollars and thousands of resources to investigate whether I have any ties to Vladimir Putin. Oh, that's right. We already did that. We already did that for 3 years during the first presidency. The fact they keep going back to this, he's a Putin putt. I'm telling you, this tells you that we have a Democratic Party that has no message, all right, around inflation, because we saw that over the last 4 years, around crime, certainly didn't have anything around the border. They're apparently a pro-war party now because they want this war to go on in Ukraine in perpetuity. And overall, who's their leader? Like, who's leading this party? Is it Jasmine Crockett? Because you want to see a lot more of her if you're a Republican. That's certainly for sure. Is it AOC? Is it Chuck Schumer? Is it Goofy Tim Walz, who's entertaining a presidential run? They don't have a leader. They don't have a message. And they don't have anything optimistic about the country. So they could do all their protesting they want as they like with noisemakers or walking out during Trump's speech. That didn't reflect well on Nancy Pelosi at all when she did that during the last State of the Union that Trump had. And it won't reflect well now. And by the way, if Trump says something along the lines that Democrats in the Senate refused to back 45 of them, enough to kill it, women competing against men in sports, that being a bad thing, if they somehow object to that or boo, go ahead, because you're on the 20 side of an 80-20 issue. There's just no common sense on that side of the aisle anymore. It's really remarkable to watch.
Yeah, you're completely right. Speaking with Joe Concha right now, the Russia story is the in case of emergency, break glass, and then you pull out the latest Russia hoax that you can come up with. That's Donald Trump knows that. Watching the joint address tonight, we expect that maybe some Democrats won't show up. maybe some Democrats will show up in. They'll have to pick which Ukraine blue and yellow outfit that they wear to support Ukraine over the United States tonight. What do you expect to see from the opposition party at this joint address this evening?
Some said they will not show up, so they'll boycott it. And okay, great. You don't see them. They're out of sight, out of mind, I suppose. I'm seeing that Hakeem Jeffries is saying, let's not do any noisemakers. Let's not heckle the president. If they do that, they'll look immature. And as usual, they're allowing their emotions to get to them. But more importantly, they'll look like the party that's taking their cues from MSNBC at this point. And that's not what you want to do, because at this point, MSNBC, I think, has more employees than actual viewers. So, you know, that message is gone, right? I mean, there never was one, really. If it's just to resist, and they think, again, this is 2017, and if they scream loud enough that that's going to have some sort of negative impact on Trump. The problem is they're on the wrong side of almost every major issue. And when that happens, and the American people still, you know, support Donald Trump, 50, 51, 52% approval, which is his all-time high, they're going to look stupid, they're going to look immature, and they're going to look like a party that isn't offering anything in terms of a tangible solution while not even being able to have a conversation, instead acting like, you know, it's sophomore year and it's well past their curfew at this point.
Joe, before we let you go, we have a poll every day on the show. We ask our YouTube audience to go vote in it. And ooh, today is great. The state of the union, the state of the country. Granted, a lot of people are making sure that we understand that it started as an F before Donald Trump took over. What do you think about the state of the country right now?
State of the country is improving, right? We mentioned the border before. This war in Ukraine could be ending as well. So that's all good. And we just see overall more Americans are optimistic about the next 4 years than certainly they were during the last four. So the state of our union is strong. But until some real laws are passed, you know, besides executive orders, it is one that is still in flux. And it is a state of the union, Annie, that is hopelessly divided.
That is absolutely the case. Well, we look forward to talking to you again pretty soon. That book of yours is going to be come out, and the greatest comeback ever
next
materializing
month.
Now in front of our eyes as the president is going to deliver that address tonight. We look forward to following you on X and getting all your hot takes.
Thanks, Annie.
You're welcome. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye. Joe Concha on X at Joe Concha TV. A great follow. He is always very pithy with his remarks, but also paying a lot of attention to how the media is reacting and kind of keep the temperature of the room by following Joe Concha TV on X. His book, The Greatest Comeback Ever, Inside Trump's Big Beautiful Campaign, will be available in April. I'm looking forward to the speech tonight. I'm going to watch it and take it in, and I'm sure many of you are as well. Well, I'll be curious to see the mood, the tone that President Trump takes, especially considering it's the first address he gets to give. So you can, you know, if it's the last one you're going to deliver, and you know that either it's the end of your term as president or you're in an election year, that kind of will shade the way that you present your tone to the American people. There's a lot of winning taking place, but there's also a lot of sitting on the edge of your seat that's taking place with the tariffs that are being implemented. We're doing things that we haven't done before. And the uncertainty that that evokes a lot with the business climate and everything. We'll see how Donald Trump chooses to present what they've been able to do in those first 6 weeks, but then also what he has in store coming up in the coming weeks, months, and years. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, very excited to have former United States Senator from Missouri, Jim Talent, on the show with us. He is the chairman of the Reagan Institute's National Leadership Council, and we're going to talk to him about the Zelensky situation with Ukraine, the minerals deal, the peace deal. I'm also going to get his thoughts on the tariff Cold War of sorts that is taking place with Canada. North of us, Justin Trudeau addressing President Trump today as Donald. Of course, after Donald Trump has referred to Justin Trudeau as governor, it continues. We have Jim Talent when we come back. Don't go away.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want
faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. Make it on
your own, but we don't have breaking news that President Trump, for now, pausing all U.S. military aid to Ukraine until he determines that the Ukrainians are actually showing some good faith peace negotiations commitment. And a senior Trump administration official is telling Fox this is not a permanent termination of aid. It's a pause.
So there was the news breaking last night on the Ingram Show. That's when it came out that the United States is talked about it, a temporary pause, initiated a temporary pause on military aid, waiting for good faith negotiations, peace negotiations to come back into play. We wanted to get somebody on here who could walk us through where we are right now in this negotiation, or whatever you might want to call it, with Zelensky, Ukraine, and President Trump. We welcome former United States Senator from Missouri, Senator Jim Talent, to the show. Also the chairman of the Reagan Institute's National Leadership Council. Thank you, Senator, for being with us here today. It's great to have you.
Hey, thanks for asking me, Annie.
You bet. You know, I wanted to get your open thoughts on where we are right now, trying to achieve peace between Russia and Ukraine. Lots has transpired. What are you thinking right now about where peace might be acquired between these two countries?
Well, I think the opportunity for a deal that is in our interests and also in Ukraine's interests is still very strong. So we got involved in the war because of the old saw, you know, the enemy of my adversary is my friend. And Putin had Russia under Putin had made itself the adversary of the United States, not just in Eastern Europe, but also in the Middle East, and with their unlimited friendship for China. But I wrote 2 years ago that it was not in our interest as a country to finance indefinitely a static battlefield, which is what it looked very much to me like it was going to become. And it's not in Ukraine's interest either to fight a war of attrition. And so the obvious deal is basically a ceasefire more or less along existing lines. Ukraine gets rebuilt, and it ought to be with European money. Then there is some kind of an effective guarantee going forward to protect against further aggression. Russia, meanwhile, gets out of the war, and there may be some other sweeteners in there, like lowering sanctions, which they've talked about, and that's what Trump was headed to. Mm. I don't even think it was a policy choice so much as just an inevitable recognition of reality that this war going on like this isn't in anybody's benefit. So that's what the deal needed to be. Now, they were proceeding towards that, and the obvious point of this rare earth minerals deal was to knit Ukraine more closely to the United States and to the West so that we would have an interest in protecting their sovereignty in the future. Is also a very good deal for us because we need their rare earth minerals, and a good deal for them because it would help rebuild the country. So that's the background. Now, real quickly, when Zelensky did what he did, whether he intended to do it or he just blew up or both, effectively, in the context of negotiation, what he was saying was, well, I don't think President Trump will dare exercise the leverage to try and get me to the table by cutting off or suspending military aid. Well, if you're the president, the only way you can respond to that in the context of negotiations is to show, no, actually, I do have that leverage over you. Mm. And that's what the president did. I mean, it had to follow. The logic of negotiations meant it had to follow. And Zelensky has now said, oh, gee, this was all very regrettable. I really do want peace. I think we can negotiate. So I'm hopeful that this will be a bump in the road. And I think that's probably what President Trump believes. And I'll just say, Annie, this was never going to be easy, but it's necessary. And I think you know, Trump is right, that he's the one to do it.
We're speaking with Senator Jim Talent here on the Annie Frye Show. I'm wondering how much of what took place takes place all the time in negotiations. It's just so rare that we, in, you know, via the press, are privy to be able to see this type of negotiation taking place. Is this common, the way the back and forth took place, maybe in a more private setting, and it's just odd that we were able to take it in?
Well, it's common for President Trump to be more transparent publicly than most presidents would be. And, you know, he talks about tactics publicly, but no, I would have to say this was pretty extraordinary. You know, there's a lot of work behind the scenes that goes into these, you know, president-to-president meetings. And it's very clear, I mean, everybody has said this, that this was supposed to be Zelensky coming in. They do the handshake, the mutual compliments. They sign the agreement. They have lunch, and he goes home. And it was clear that that's what the Ukrainians had committed to doing. And what the United States had committed to doing, and to blow it up publicly like that. I'm not a diplomat, Annie, but I know enough about it to know, yes, that was pretty extraordinary. And as I said, really after that, I don't think the American government had much choice, but if it wanted to get the negotiations back on track, but to do what we did, and it worked.
We're speaking with the chairman of the Reagan Institute's National Leadership Council and, of course, former United States Senator from Missouri, Jim Talent. Can I ask you some questions, or maybe just an open question about the minerals deal? Because I hear a lot of people read a lot about, you know, in short form on X posts and stuff about what the minerals deal entails. Some people saying the United States is going to go over to Ukraine and pillage their land and take all of their rare earth. What is the minerals deal exactly?
Well, rare earth minerals, and there's a number of different ones, they're extremely valuable and they're necessary to a sophisticated economy. The Chinese right now have the lion's share of them, in particular the lion's share of the processing of them. That's a security risk in addition to being an economic liability for us and indeed for the rest of the world. So Ukraine has a number of those rare earth minerals. They can't develop them because, well, yes, they're fighting a war now, but they don't have the means. They don't have the capital. They don't have the technology. They don't have the workforce. They don't have the companies to develop them. So this is a natural opportunity for the United States to invest there. No, we were never going to like it. It wasn't a case where they had to give us their rare earth minerals. It was a case where we would develop it, and then there would be a sharing in the profits because they own them, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so it would be beneficial for us from a number of different standpoints. The broader sense, because what Trump is trying to do is he's trying to say, look, a security guarantee without the kind of connections between Ukraine and the West that give us a reason to try and defend them is not going to protect Ukraine, and it's not going to help us. And so he's saying this serves both foreign policy and security purposes and economic purposes and helps us get supply chains independent of China. It's a win-win for everybody, which is probably the reason the administration proposed it. And it's something Ukraine needed to go along with. I think Zelensky is having difficulty backing away from his maximalist goals, but Putin's going to have to do the same thing. I mean, Putin wants to detach the entirety of four provinces in the east, which he has not conquered. He wants Ukraine to agree never to arm itself again, and he wants us to agree not to sell them arms. And he's not going to get any of that. And Ukraine is not going to get a commitment to try and force Russia out of Crimea. They tried to do that with an offensive in 2023, and it failed. So we're going to go back to the status quo ante from a territory standpoint. Russia will probably get a little more territory. And then we're going to do what we should have done, and Trump tried to do, which is develop in the past, develop the kind of relationship which will be a deterrent to further aggression in the future and will stabilize Europe.
Senator Talent, this is obviously something that's being shared by a political party with a lot of political ramifications, consequences. I think that's the intention, at least. But in your expertise, is Donald Trump cozying up to Vladimir Putin?
No, I mean, and not not broadly speaking, and not with regard to Ukraine either. I mean, Trump was the only president who actually armed the Ukrainians. He also put sanctions on the Nord Stream pipeline, which the Europeans didn't want because their policy at the time was to be dependent on Russian energy. Trump went over there and said, this is dumb. You're depending on somebody who does not have your interests in mind. So, no, that's just not true. It's just if you want to, Ukraine's not going to win this war. We have to have an agreement. An agreement has to be signed by both sides. And as Trump said, if you're trying to be an honest broker, which is what he wants to do, you don't accomplish that by attacking either side. And so he's not going to go around attacking Vladimir Putin when I want him to sign an agreement. But that doesn't mean he's going to give him what he wants. They're both going to have to compromise.
Senator Talent, after the confrontation in the Oval Office on Friday, there was a flurry of comments. You'll notice the trend here. I'm referring to things that are read on X because this is where a lot of talking happens. And I know that you know very much so that talking is a lot different than action. When you see these world leaders, these people representing countries all over the place saying, I stand with Ukraine. And then we see, the UK saying, we're going to support you. We're going to back you. So on and so forth. Do these countries have the ability to provide Ukraine what the United States was offering to provide Ukraine in lieu of the United States being involved at all?
No, I mean, they can assist, but they've allowed the defense establishments to atrophy. They're basically virtually disarmed. You know, I wrote a column about 10 years ago, which I pointed out that the Germans, who used to have a very strong army, had to use broomsticks in their training exercises because they didn't have enough rifles. So, you know, they're very fierce in their rhetoric, but not in war or in preparing for war. And Putin, no aggressor, Putin or anybody else is going to be deterred, you know, by promises or rhetoric. They're going to be deterred by nations tending to their interests, developing common interests with allies and partners, and then preparing to defend them, which is why the Trump administration, and in fact every administration, Trump was certainly not the only ones to do this, have insisted that the NATO allies, and in particular the Western Europeans, have to start spending more money on their defense. I mean, they're going to continue to need American leadership, certain American command, certain American specialties like intelligence. They're going to need American support, but they can be doing a lot more than they're doing. And if they value the alliance, that's what they'll do. But they've worked themselves into this rhythm of, you know, the Americans do everything for them. And then, by the way, they never hesitate to criticize us.
Right.
I mean, I'm not trying to. This is not a healthy relationship. And every president's been saying this. They need to do more, particularly with regard to Europe. And they can. You know, the war has shown, Annie, that Putin's ground forces are not that strong. Really, the Europeans, if they were to establish, and they would need our help with this, but if they were to establish a base in Eastern Europe, say in Poland, the Poles are doing very well in terms of preparing. 5 or 6 brigades, several of them armored brigades, some air power, the supporting infrastructure. That would be pretty effective in deterring any kind of aggression against NATO or, for that matter, Ukraine. And that's well within their capabilities to do. They just haven't been doing it. They talk about it, but they don't do it. So, look, my attitude is if they want to be more independent and develop their defenses and take more responsibility, I'm fine with that. They think it's threatening us. It's not. We have other fish to fry.
That's right. That's what Donald Trump has been saying in so many different ways that, you know, we can't be relied on and the only people in the game, that everyone needs to participate in a more equal fashion. And maybe this helps get that job done. Senator Talent, a pleasure to have you on the show. Thank you for those well thought out views on all of this, because it's complicated for people, and everybody who is in short form response on platforms like X, they're just trying to get a political gain out of it. And we know this is a longer game than that.
Yep. And it's a pleasure to be with you, Annie. Hope we can do it again.
I would look forward to that. Thank you so much. We'll talk to you soon. Jim Talent, former United States Senator from Missouri, chairman of the Reagan Institute's National Leadership Council. Great to have him on the show to break that down. isn't it, to me, when I'm looking at what the Democrats are doing, all to me, it's like the only thing the Democrats want is to attach Trump and Putin. That's all that matters. It's not actually like you would think, again, going back to the I stand with Ukraine and Ukraine flags and all of the things that you put on your social media accounts to make sure everybody knows essentially when they see you that you're a Democrat or that you're not a MAGA Trump Republican or whatever it is. That's why you put that up there. Wouldn't you want peace for those people? And the advocacy on the Democrat side is really just Trump and Putin, because all they care about is the disparaging of Donald Trump.
There is a certain percentage of the left, because it's not everybody, but there's a certain percentage of the left, and it has to be, I always refer to this poll, because it was around 30% of the people walked away from the first debate between Biden and Trump and said, well, Biden won that. Like, they really don't have any consistency in their beliefs. There's no real bedrock to the morality. It's just based on whatever's currently happening in exactly like you said, in the circle of Donald Trump. What's he doing? Whatever that is must be bad, so I'm against it. But if he switched, I mean, Donald Trump could tomorrow come out and completely switch a position on something, and they would just turn as fast as he would.
Yeah. Because everything, I mean, their world revolves around Donald Trump.
Yeah.
It's kind of sad.
It's not all the left, though, but it is a huge portion
of the loudest.
Yes,
it's the loudest portion of the left. And honestly, I'm in a politically unfortunate way okay with it, because the people who are being quiet right now on the left, those are the people who are going to save the party.
Yes.
When they start speaking up. And I haven't seen it yet. Quick break. When we come back, we're going to grade the State of the Union. We'll do that here on the show. What is your thoughts on the state of the country at this point? Some comments that we've gotten from you folks on YouTube already, and you can come join us on the Annie Fry YouTube channel and leave your vote and comments as well. Ron says B/C, no Epstein files? No way. More on the Epstein files that folks want. Dr. P says B/C because we're off to a great start, but there's so much to do. And Chris says, I said B/C. It's moving up from a DF from the last administration. What are your thoughts? Leave them. We'll be right back.
This is just a simple reminder that Brian Kilmeade is coming to town. I didn't mention it during the time check, so I wanted to real quick before we get into the segment here. Saturday, March 22nd, Brian Kilmeade is going to be at the Factory in St. Charles. It's going to be a great night. If you've ever been to a Kilmeade event with us, we all have a lot of fun at these events. Annie and Mark and Mark will all be on the stage with him for part of this event. I think there's going to be a lot of comedy and history, in his words, of explaining what makes America great, where we've been, where we are now. You may be a part of that.
I think I was asked like what I want to do, and I said, just tell me what you need me to do.
So you will be a part of that.
Have you heard what I'm supposed to do yet?
You're supposed to be on the stage.
Song and dance?
You speak for a good hour and a half. And then Brian comes on at the end and says, wasn't that great?
Because Annie Fry, ladies and gentlemen.
He's Annie Fry, everybody.
So that is March 22nd, if you want to see Annie speaking for a very long time.
That's not
completely
ad-libbing. Don't come because of that. Of course you're going to come because of Brian Kilmeade. That's why I'm going.
VIP meet and greet experiences can be added, by the way, to any existing seats. Yeah. So if you've already gotten a seat and you were going to get those, they were sold out. We've added a few more if you
want to. But they're limited, so they're going fast.
Yeah.
And thank you to Bob and Tammy Kershaw for the sponsorship for this
Retirement
Advisor Group. Very excited to have them involved.
You got it.
You want to give me a grade on the State of the Union? Of course, as you said, I love when I write a poll and then I have to explain it every time. Grade the State of the Union, the State of the Country, A/C, D/F. Ryan?
I'm really with everybody on this. It seems like most of the commenters are saying B/C because things are moving in the right direction, but gosh, there's so darn much to do.
James says on YouTube, America's grade is a high C, but if you consider it was around 30% F when Trump took office, the administration is definitely improving the grade, though. Brad?
Yeah, I'm with everybody else. The B/C would be my vote. My actual grade will be in a C, and it's like everybody else is saying. We were in rough shape when he came into office. I like everything about the trajectory that the country is going, and I think that given a little more time, given the current trajectory, we're going to be at that A level before we know it. But until then, it's like raising a bad grade in school. It's going to take a little time to dig out of the hole, but I think we're doing great.
I'm a B/C, but it's hard not to give America an A just because America deserves an A. But I think that's kind of the point. America does deserve to be an A. It should be an A. It is the A. If you're grading the world on a curve, America sets the curve. But I do think that there's a lot of remedy that needs to happen. And that's why we elected Donald Trump. And I think we actually have to remember when we elected him to do the hard things for the betterment of the country. And the fact that he's a zero fudge brownies given kind of guy makes it so that he's going to implement things in his own Donald Trump way. You know it's coming. And for when people are like, I like some of the things Donald Trump does, but just the way he acts, blah, blah, blah. That's over. That's past. Mm-hmm. He has increased his support every time he's run for office. He has won people over with action, not with words. I mean, really, in spite of it. And just think, if from the very beginning, if the media would have covered Donald Trump fairly, all of this would have just been considered character, color, just something that's kind of fun that goes along with him, his personality. I mean, good grief. You've got Joe Biden and everyone's like, oh, look at his Ray-Ban aviators. He's so cool. He was not cool.
He's like an uncle.
Yeah, because he says things that are regrettable and sometimes racist. I mean, that's really the, like, when you're watching Joe Biden stand there and talk about Indian people at 7-Elevens and stuff, that's career ending for a Republican. Because Republicans wouldn't stand for it. We've had our fair share of people who've run on our side of the party who were not good. I'm thinking of the Alabama senatorial candidate. What's his name?
Oh,
Roy Moore.
I was thinking.
I don't even remember what he said. I just remember there was controversy.
There's just a lot of weird stuff. And I mean, it's like, come on, be better than that. But when Joe Biden does it, it's just, he's just a colorful guy. But like, think about if they would have lauded over Donald Trump and all of his intricacies that many people have over the course of time come to love, really in spite of the losers that got put in place to do things in the party of the Democrats that is not pro-America. They are anti-America. We have spent probably 15 years, 2008, maybe more than 15 years, being told that America is bad, being told that America is originally sinful, being told that America is in some ways irredeemable, that you would have to transform the entire thing at the most foundational level in order to put it on the path of redeemability. Nobody, like, the, you would think that in a binary conversation that it's either that, what the Obama campaign and movement set into motion, you might be forced into a corner where you think it's either that or America has never done anything wrong. And America is the most BA country that's ever existed. Everything it's done because it's America is great and it will always be great. And America can do no wrong. Neither one of those things is true. And the importance of acknowledging that America does have brokenness in its past, because how could it not? I mean, I believe in a sinful world. I do actually believe in original sin, but not just applied to the United States of America. The idea that brokenness and sinfulness exists is not special or proprietary only to the United States of America. And it certainly isn't proprietary only to the United States of America, in so that one other political party can benefit from fixing it. That's just politics. When you really go back and think of the full context of American history and you understand that America was the first country to ever kill itself over the idea of ending slavery, because that's where they were able to, so many of the righteous causes that the left seems to have right now was born out of initially the separation that this country has had between black people and white people. That was the initial thing. And when you think about how this country imported slavery, and you know that importing slavery was a very typical practice at the time that it was being done here, and then you realize that white people and black people and everybody in between fought and died over the ending of it here, I think that's a pretty magnificent thing. But we like just skip over that part. That's not to be celebrated. In fact, they work really hard to make sure that you only remember that there was ever the bad thing, the big bad thing that happened. Of course it was big. Of course it was bad. But it's in 2025, you can walk around to people of all skin tones and say some of the things that come out of the deep academic, far left, progressive Democrat Party, and present that to a man on the street of any shade of color, and they look at you like, you're an idiot. What are you talking about? This is America. And I always go back to the, and I always, Ami Horowitz, mm-hmm. was that the guy who mm-hmm. was talking about whether or not using ID to vote was racist or not? And when he was going from person to person to person, and they were mostly black people, saying, do you think it's racist to require a state ID to vote? They're all like, why would that be racist? And he's like, well, do you know how to get an ID? And then they give the legit address to the DMV in downtown New York City. I can't think of anything more spot on than those conversations. And like, you're not, it's like, pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. The whole thing is a ruse. The whole thing is a ruse. Yes, we have a-holes that exist. And if you're a racist person, then you qualify to be that category. There's a lot of people who hate people for stupid reasons. Those people are jerks. They're awful people. But you can't relegate them to just being Republicans. You can't just say that the jerks are in a political party. Both sides have them. And in the midst of redefining what all of our problems have been for the last 15 plus years, we forgot to address the actual problems that exist, and getting taken to the cleaners from country to country to country to country, so that some sort of more globalist, anti-American sentiment can really set in. Donald Trump is unafraid to try to remedy all those issues. And it's just, it's kind of white knuckle stuff to watch.
You're not saying either that it would be real easy to come on here and go, you know what? Democrats are stupid and they're jerks, and Republicans are not. That's not at all what you're saying.
No.
You're saying jerks exist on both sides. And it's ultimately the policies that matter, because that's what people vote on. And being given the gift, oddly, of having a president that knew not how to govern at all for 4 years, and then seeing somebody who does, it's interesting to see how many Americans are looking at the dichotomy between the two and going, well, I think I know which side I'm on.
Yeah, 100%. There's jerks on both sides, but there's also good people on both sides. I'm excited to hear what the president says tonight at the joint address. Go vote in the YouTube live chat poll. We'll be back in just a minute. Don't go away.